Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all here. We're going to be going into Numbers 31. But before we do that, I'd like to open us up with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for waking us up this morning and giving us new life each day. Thank you for allowing us to get here safely and to come to study your word. We hope to be able to look into your word and read carefully and understand and comprehend. We hope that we can continue to grow and build up one another in the faith and in our understanding of your word. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Cool. So, last time we talked in Numbers 30, we talked about oaths and the difference between, vows and oaths made by men and the effects they have and the difference in the result of vows and oaths by women. In 31, we're moving on to a different section, like a new section, new events. And so a short overview for 31. The Lord essentially tells Moses to take vengeance upon the Midianites and then gather the people. And so first, the Midianites, as a little background, are a nomadic people that are descent from Abraham and his second wife, Keturah. The land of Midian is far south of Canaan. However, large bands of Midianites would roam far from their home, and such a band was near the promised land when the Israelites had arrived. And so now that we know who the Midianites were, why does the Lord call for vengeance upon them? Does anybody have any guesses or any ideas? David?
I think it has everything to do with the story of Balaam and the ways that they wanted to curse the Israelites through Balaam, and then after what they were able to do to seduce the Israelites with their gods.
Exactly. Thank you, David. So, essentially. The Midianites were responsible for enticing the Israelites into the worship of the idol Baal, or Baal. And so God calls for their destruction. In verses 4 through 6 of chapter 31, Moses gathers 12,000 men, 1,000 from each tribe, in order to go up against the Midianites. Verses 7 through 8, we see that the Israelites defeat the Midianites and kill all of the men along with the five kings of Midian. We also see that they kill Balaam. Now, this character, we know Balaam from past events, and based on Balaam's actions from earlier in the book, at face value, you could assume that he was a righteous man, but as we've discussed in the last couple of weeks, his actual intentions behind his actions and whether or not he's actually a godly man have been called into question. And we somewhat get confirmation on that in verse 16, when he's subsequently killed. After that, we see they brought their plunder and gathered to the plains of Moab. Moses is upset with the leaders of his army because they left the non-virgin Midianite women alive. And so in verse 14, he says, "And Moses was angry with the officers of the army, the commanders of the thousands and the commanders of the hundreds, who had come from service in the war. Moses said to them, 'Have you let all the women live? Behold, these on Balaam's advice caused the people of Israel to act treacherously against the Lord in the incident of Peor, and so the plague came among the congregation of the Lord. Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman who has known man by lying with him.'" In this situation, you might think that this reaction is a bit harsh, but the Lord doesn't want to take any chances with allowing these people to further influence and sway God's chosen people. And so this is why we see such a ruthless reaction from Moses. The worship of Baal specifically, which is what they enticed them to do, involved immoral practices such as, primarily ritualistic prostitution, And the reason why they have the virgin Midianite women spared is because they are presumed innocent in taking part in Israel's sin in these, you know, ritualistic acts. Not only that, but if you look in Deuteronomy 12, verse 10 through 14, there is a process by which foreign women can be taken in and married to Israelite men. So actually do want to turn to that. Verse 10, when you go to war against your enemies and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands and you take captives, if you notice among the captives a beautiful woman and are attracted to her, you may take her as your wife. Bring her into your home and have her shave her head, trim her nails, and put aside the clothes she was wearing when captured. After she has lived in your house and mourned her father and her mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. If you're not pleased with her, let her go. Let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you have dishonored her. And so there was a method for Midianites women and other foreign women to be brought in and married to Israelite men. That's another reason why they were, you know, able to be brought in. Through all this process, we should also keep in mind that though the Midianites were responsible for influencing the Israelites into idol worship, it was still their decision to stray away from God and to seek other gods. And so as Christians, we can't blame the world for why we go against God. We can't necessarily use that as a scapegoat. We always have to try to take accountability for when we mess up. But when we do mess up, we always have God to go back to. All right. This should also be a reminder of how urgently we act when something in our lives is leading us away from God. You know, Moses does not play around in the situation. He's very pragmatic about his actions here. And so to separate ourselves from what makes us unholy and act as holy people, that is, you know, what we're supposed to do. In verses 19 and 20, we see that the Israelites who participated in the killings must go through a cleansing process. Verse 19, encamp outside the camp 7 days. Whoever of you has killed any person and whoever has touched the slain, purify yourselves and your captives on the third day and on the seventh day. You shall purify every garment and every article of skin, all working of goat's hair and every article of wood. So I believe this is linked to the events in Numbers 19, verses 11 through 13. We saw that. So in verses 11, whoever touches a human corpse will be unclean for 7 days. They must purify themselves with the water on the third day, and on the seventh day they will be clean. But if they do not purify themselves on the third and seventh days, they will not be clean. And if they fail to purify themselves after touching a human corpse, they defile the Lord's tabernacle. They must be cut off from Israel because the water of cleansing has not been sprinkled on them. They are unclean and their uncleanness remains on them. And so this is something that's consistent throughout this book, in that touching dead bodies and not cleansing yourself afterwards is a big no-no. And so God takes it very seriously, and God takes the cleansing of our bodies and very seriously. All right. the rest of the chapter is mainly about how the spoils were divided amongst the Israelites and the various offerings made to God. Now we see that the spoils were divided equally amongst both the soldiers who took part in the battle and the rest of the community. The Lord, seems as though God took 1/500th of the warrior's half and 1/50th of the congregation's half. The warrior's contribution went to the priests and the congregation's contribution went to the Levites. And so there seems to be a distinction between the Israelite community. In my translation, it says the fighting men who seem to be the Israelite soldiers. And so in this distinction, that's how it's divided. Of the community, okay, I already said that. In verse 48 through the end of the chapter, we see that the officers take count of the soldiers and learn that not a single man was killed in battle. And so they immediately want to give offering to the Lord. Like the officers in this example, as Christians, we should be very quick to thank the Lord when things are going well for us and when blessings are given to us, because it's not guaranteed. And so they give gold and various jewelry, which Moses and Eleazar accept, and they take it into the tent of meeting, which is the tabernacle. And they make a memorial for it. All right, cool. And so, overarching thoughts about the chapter. Does anybody have any thoughts or questions about that chapter before we move on to 33?
Just that we keep seeing when the people have to give the sacrifices back to the Lord, like it's a portion that they have to set aside for the Lord, and we've discussed before how it's thanking God for what he's given them, and in a way it's like keeping God's promise that he will provide for them again. Like the same thing here, he's winning this battle for them, and they're thanking him with the spoils of what he gave them. You're just giving back what is really belonging to the Lord. But it's like a reminder for the people, like, God did this for me.
Exactly. And so throughout that process, they're always, you know, understanding and staying faithful. I kind of, in this section, a thought I had was similar to David and his relationship with God, especially in the fact that, you know, he was granted, you know, so many victories, and in this situation, they were clearly blessed in that, you know, no one died. And so I thought that was a cool detail, in that when they are faithful to the Lord and when they are acting in accordance to his will, results, you know, show for themselves. So that can be very encouraging to us as well. All right, so if no one has any other thoughts, then we can move on to 32. 32 is about the Transjordan tribes, the Reubenites and the Gadites, and half of the tribe of Manasseh wanted to settle east of the Jordan, upon the land they had already captured. So they saw that the land was suitable for livestock, and so they went to Moses and the elders, starting in verse 3, Atoroth, Dibon, Jazer, Namir, Heshbon, Elela, Sebam, Nabo, and Bayon, and the land that the Lord had struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. And they said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to you, to your servants, for a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. So in this situation, these three tribes are asking for these lands that reside just outside of the promised land. And so they go to the elders to request for them. Now, Moses immediately assumes that they have selfish intentions and accuses them of discouraging Israel from crossing the Jordan and going into the promised land. He goes on in verses 6 through Sorry, I'm having trouble seeing. In verses 6 through 10, let me read. But Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, shall your brothers go into war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that the Lord has given them? Your fathers did this when I sent for them, when I sent from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the people Israel from going into the land that the Lord had given them. Now the Lord was kindled on that day, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men who came out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, not except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenuzite, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they wholly followed the Lord. Okay. And so, based on the context of these verses, it seems as though the tribes of Reuben and Gad had greatly contributed to the military force, as we see Moses suggest that their absence would leave them completely vulnerable. This vulnerability would, in turn, discourage the Israelites from going and crossing the Jordan because they were afraid of the people that lived in the Promised Land. And so, in this section, Moses references the time when the Israelites had left Egypt, essentially saying that the last time Israel was discouraged from going into the Promised Land, God didn't take too kindly to it, and they didn't want a repeat of what happened and what caused the 40 years in the wilderness. And so these tribes then go on to clear things up with Moses, though. In verses 16 through 19, they come and say, we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we will take up arms ready to go before the people of Israel until we have brought them into their place and our little ones live in the fortified cities. Because of the inhabitants of the land, we will not return to our homes until each of the people of Israel has gained his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond. Because your inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. So Moses said to them, because your inheritance has come to us on this side of the Jordan to the east. Okay. And so Moses responds. Well, actually, first I want to talk about that section. So when they go to clear things up, their intention wasn't to leave Israel hanging, but to create cities for the women and children so that the fighting men could return once the people west of the Jordan were driven out and Israel receives its inheritance. So I want to highlight this section because I think the thoughts of the Midianites, right, not the Midianites, thoughts of these three tribes are very important in that they still consider the inheritance of Israel as a whole, and they still put emphasis on carrying out the will of God first and foremost before trying to, gain any inheritance of their own. And so they make it clear to Moses that, look, we still want to enter the Promised Land and carry out the will of God. We just found an inheritance over here as well. And so after that, will is done, then we can go out and claim our own inheritance. I think this way of thinking can be very simplified and can be a good application for us in that as Christians, we should always strive to try to help other people to gain their inheritance in Christ. And we should always try to help other Christians to build their relationship with God and with the church. And so in this, we can follow the example in not just thinking about ourselves, but also thinking about others and how close their relationship with God is. And so I thought that was a good application. So Moses takes them up on their offer in verses 20 through 24. So verse 20, Moses says to them, if you will do this, if you will take up arms and go before the Lord for the war, and every armed man, if you pass over the Jordan before the Lord, until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, and after that you shall return and be free of obligation to the Lord and to Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you do not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. And so the tribes agree upon this, on their promise, and Moses went ahead and informed Eleazar and the priests on the agreement that they made. Okay, so does anybody have any thoughts or questions about this section and about the, you know, the actions of the tribes and... Yes, David?
I think, Jordan, is like you said, it's a good application of, here is Reuben and Gad, and they are thinking of others. They're thinking of others that, you know, we want this right here, but we're also going to fight with all of these people, all the Canaanites, and we're going to help all the other tribes. I think there's just a very practical application here about the communication that is necessary. If they had just done this and just said, okay, this is our plan, but then Moses gets really upset. What's going on here? Well, they were talking about this, and there was open communication to resolve any type of issue. I think this is just interesting when you get to the book of Joshua, the very last few chapters of the book of Joshua. This same type of scenario plays out, where there are questions about what are these guys thinking over on the eastern side of the Jordan. They're building an altar over there on the eastern side of the Jordan. Wait a minute, are you saying that you're going to have another place for worship? And so all of the tribes are ready to go to war. There's going to be a civil war at the end of the book of Joshua. After all of these victories, now we're going to have a civil war. But again, they are thinking about the future. They're being very thoughtful about the future. And also, in the end, the way everything is resolved is by open communication between all of the tribes. And then everybody says, oh yeah, well, that's a really good idea. And so once everybody communicates, everybody says, oh yeah, I'll put my dagger away. There's no need to execute anyone or attack anyone. And that's just really helpful for us as well, thinking about when we have problems among brethren or problems in our family or whatever. So often, if we just communicate about our needs and other people's needs, having open communication with resolve some of the issues.
Exactly. Thank you for that. And, Justin.
I was also thinking, if you think about the last several weeks, the reoccurring theme was they're grumbling, they're impatient, they're unhappy with what's happening, not trusting. So you can almost see why Moses, he heard this, he's like, well,
yeah.
Because you almost see, you kind of feel like the same thing's happening again, but like David said, then they get into the communication and talk it out and see, okay, now we understand where all this is coming from. But it's interesting, like, seeing how those things from, like, what have previously happened are impacting, you know, what they're going through now.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why, you know, open lines of communication are just so important, because, you know, at first it is understandable, like you said, for Moses to have this reaction at first because, you know, of what happened back in Egypt and, you know, how the people have been acting and everything like that. And so it shows us examples of, you know, Moses, you know, he is right to take seriously what God's will is and carrying out God's will. And so for him to be this, like, panicked and to have this reaction is somewhat appropriate, but also we need to understand to not be so quick to judge people's actions or people's intentions, because at the end of the day, you don't know exactly. And if you don't have all the information, then, you know, you can probably jump to conclusions, which is what Moses does. Even though his intentions were good, he still jumped to conclusions because he didn't have all the information. And so just using this as an example, and also an example from Joshua brought up by David, of why, you know, open communication and being open with one another is so very important in building each other up spiritually and moving forward. David again.
And so like Justin said, instead of it becoming a comparison of, yeah, these Israelites haven't learned anything, it comes out that Reuben and Gad are actually, wow, this is a new generation. This is a different type of people. They are really into the promises of God. And so it's not that they're. It's like a, you know, otherwise, you know, why am I going to go over to Canaan and go to battle, risk my life, so that you can have your promises? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is not my battle. Let me just have this right here. But they're looking toward the promises of God. So this is an unselfish new generation. And so it highlights this new generation that is ready for the promised land.
Very good point. All right. Does anybody have any other thoughts before we move on? Alrighty. So, going on, the tribes then agree to uphold their end of the promise, and Moses went ahead and informed Eleazar and the priests on the agreement that has been made. We see that the specific lands are in the kingdoms of, or the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Ammonites, and the kingdom of Og of Bashan. And so, verses 34 through the end, we see these cities that are built. I can just read. And the people of Gad built Dibon, Atora, Aroer, Eroth, Sophan, Jazer, Jogbeda, Beth Nimra, Beth Haran, fortified cities and folds for the sheep. And the people of Reuben built Heshbon, Elela, Kirathim, Nabo, Baal Meon, these names were changed, and Sibma, and their names, and the names, and they gave names to the cities and that they built. And the sons of Machir, the sons of Mesha, went to Gilead and captured it and disposed of the Amorites who were in there. And Moses gave Gilead to Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he settled it. And Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and captured their villages and called them Hevath Jair, and Noba went and captured Canaanith and its villages and called it Noba after his own name. All right, cool. So that is the end of chapter 32. Now, I have run out of content, but we are going to continue on to chapter 33. And I can... this chapter is more of a recounting of Israel's journey, so I can probably just read it straight up, just so that we can get a review of the overarching events. These are the stages of the people of Israel. When they went out of the land into Egypt by their companies under the leadership of Moses and Aaron, Moses wrote down their starting places stage by stage by command of the Lord. And these are their stages according to their places. They set out from Rameses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the people of Israel went out triumphantly in the sight of all the Egyptians, while the Egyptians were burying all their firstborns, whom the Lord had struck down among them. On their gods also the Lord executed judgment. So the people of Israel set out from Ramses and camped at Succoth. And they set out from Succoth and encamped at Etham, which is in the edge of the wilderness. And they set out from Etham and turned back to Phihahiroth, which is east of Baal Zephon. And they camped before Migdal. And they set out from before Hiroth and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, and went a 3 days' journey in the wilderness of Etham, and camped at Mira. And they set out from Mira and came to Elim. At Elim they were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. There were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there. And they set out from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. And they set out from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. They set out from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophka. And they set out from Dophka and camped at Elush. And they set out from Elush and camped at Rephidim, where there was no water for the people to drink. And they set out from Rephidim and camped at the wilderness of Sinai. And they set out from the wilderness of Sinai and camped at Kibroth Hattaava. And they set out from Kibroth Hattaava and camped at Hizroth. And they set out from Hizroth and camped at Ritamah. And they set out from Ritamah and camped at Rimmon Perez. And they set out from Rimmon Perez and camped at Libna. And they set out from Libna and camped at Rishah. And they set out from Rishah and camped at Kehelath. They set out from Kela, and they camped at Mount Shepher, and they set out from Shepher and camped at Harada, and they set out from Harada and camped at Mehelek Mekloth, and they camped set out. And they set out from Mekloth and camped at Tihoth. And they set out from Tihoth and camped at Tara. And they set out from Tara and camped at Mica. And they set out from Mithka and camped at Hishmona. And they camped from Hishmona and camped. They set out from Hishmona and camped at Mezaroth. And they set out from Mezaroth and camped at Benjok. And they set out from Benjok and they camped at Her Higadad. And they set out from Her Higadad and camped at Jobatha. And they set out from Jobatha and camped at Ebrona. And they set out from Ebrona and camped at Ezion Geber. And they set out from Ezion Geber and camped in the wilderness of Zin, that is Kadesh. And they set out from Kadesh and camped at Mount Hor at the edge of the land of Edom. And Aaron the priest went up to Mount Hor, at the command of the Lord, and died there. In the 14th year after the people of Israel had came out of the land of Egypt, on the first day of the fifth month, and Aaron was 123 years old when he died on Mount Hor. And the Canaanite king, Arad, who lived in Negev in the land of Canaan, heard of the coming of the people of Israel. And they set out from Mount Hor and camped at Zalmanah. And they set out from Zalmanah and camped at Punan. And they set out from Punan and camped at Oboth. And they set out from Oboth and camped at Ai Abrim and the territory of Moab. And they set out from Lim and camped at Dibon Gad. And they set out from Dibon Gad and camped at Ammon Dilblathaim, and they set out from Ablon Dilblathaim and camped at the mountains of Arabim before Nebo. And they set out from the mountains of Arabim and camped at the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. They camped at the Jordan from Beth Jishma as far as Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. And the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you and destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possessions of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land for you to possess it. And you shall inherit the land by lot according to your clans. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Wherever the lot falls for anyone, that shall be his according to the tribes of your fathers you shall inherit. But if you do not drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as your barbs your in your eyes and thorns in your side, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell, and I will do to you as I thought to do to them. Okay, so in this chapter, we just get an overview of the events following Exodus and all the way up to Numbers. And so I do not have any more content to go over. So does anybody have any overarching thoughts about the things that we've read so far? First, Justin.
I think it's interesting that, you know, they journey here, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, it started off by saying these are the events of Moses and Aaron and where they led everybody. And then just in the middle, it's like, oh, by the way, Aaron died. Like, it's kind of interesting that it's, like how we find out that Aaron passes away. You know, it's almost like summarizing all the accomplishments and places that they've been and things that they've done. And then you see that he passes away. And then it transitions to, you know, this is obviously going to be a difficult thing for everybody, but they kept moving forward and doing the things that they had to do and still being led by God. So, like, it's kind of an interesting chapter, not like a lot of the previous ones. But I found, like, those things interesting of, like, here's all the places they journeyed, and, like, it's random that this summary all of a sudden it's here, but then you see Aaron pass away, and, like, I think there's some significance there to show, like, how much of a key figure he was.
Very good. David?
I was thinking, just as students of the Bible, we come across chapters like this, and we kind of roll our eyes and say, oh, no, not again. what are we doing? What am I getting myself into? All these names that I can't pronounce, half of these names I've never even seen. It is interesting that so many of these names we haven't seen before. These are places that are not mentioned before. Some of them are, though, and I think those places that are, not only do they serve as, okay, placeholders for, okay, we do recognize this name. Geographically, we can kind of pinpoint kind of where this is, but it's also, whenever we do see something that registers as, oh yeah, I remember we talked about that, it becomes more than just a list of names. It becomes a summary of chapter of the book of Exodus all the way to the book of Numbers. So this is an important chapter for us to sit down and say, okay, what happened? Where have we just been? And it's taken us a long time just as a class to get from the book of Exodus all the way to the book of Numbers. And now this is the opportunity to kind of walk through all of that just in our minds. Yeah, we remember this. We went to right here. This is where they went to Mount Sinai, the wilderness of sin. Okay, here is where they complained about this. And so it becomes really more a very exciting chapter if we start remembering each of these different places. The same thing is true whenever we're reading like a genealogy. We read a genealogy from Matthew chapter 1 or we start reading through these are the names of the ancestors of Jesus, starting with Abraham, and we run all the way through. Oh, man, this is a big list. But when we start appreciating the connection between all of these individuals, it becomes not just a list of names, but it becomes this story. It's hard for us to discipline ourselves to do this, but it's good for us to just really kind of think about, okay, what is the connection between this point and this point all the way through the story? It becomes really kind of an exciting chapter as well. Apart from that, I think it's also, there's this underlying application or an underlying truth that how is it that these people got from Egypt to Moab? They go from this place to this place, this place to this place. I'm lost. After three verses, I'm lost. Well, guess what? The people of Israel would be lost as well. But they spend 40 years wandering in the desert. How is it that they got the, did all of this? It says, finally, and then in verse 50, then Jehovah spoke to Moses. It's God who has brought them all this way, from Egypt all the way to the plains of Moab. And so all of this journey shows us then God has brought this. The first generation has passed away. We see the passing of that first generation in chapter 33. But then the second generation comes, and God has been guiding them along all of this way. Yes, through the death of Aaron, but then all the way to the rest. And now he says, here are your instructions going forward. And so it's it's just a list of names, but it's also, there's this implication of God's faithfulness throughout the whole journey.
Yeah, very good, Dave. And I love thinking about just the entire similarity of how the relationship between the Israelites and their, you know, what's going on with them wandering, and how it kind of relates to our relationship with God, and that, you know, the Israelites wandering is essentially people without God, you know, and so God offers them a choice and a path that will be difficult, but he knows that's best for them. But when they don't choose that, now they're off wandering, and it's way worse than anything that they could have expected, or if they just went along with what God was, you know, having them going to do, because he was going to grant them victory if they did go ahead and, you know, conquer the lands and drive out, you know, the people. But instead, they wanted to follow their own path, and they didn't want to do that. And so it's kind of like how in our lives, you know, following God isn't easy, and it's not. He doesn't, you know, present it as an easy task. However, he knows it's best for us. And when people stray away from that, well, they wander around and they're lost. And so I couldn't help but see that similarity. Okay, cool. So, and Noah?
Listening to some of this reminded me of when I'm doing historical research and I'm in an area of researching deeds, what they do. That they take a known spot, a read-on spot, and they go from there and they say, you go so many this distance, then you make a turn here, you go so many distance here, then you go so many distance. And that's how they map out the land, you know, what these parts of land is. I think one of the real neat, one of the special things about the Bible, it was easy just to say, okay, they went from point A to point C. All that stuff out, but because of the details, people like us can go back and say, okay, you know, was there such a place? Yeah, there was, and go back, and constantly the Bible being assailed, being accused of being false, they say, you know, like, there was no such, and they dig down in history, they find there was. These things, at least for me, help me believe the validity of the Bible because of its detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I
because they're being very specific. They're not being vague. And even people, I'd say, all the way in our time, go back and check the Bible to see if it was accurate. And it comes accurate because it is very detailed.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah, and so that's another thing that also helped me, you know, in my journey and, you know, understanding and having better faith in God isn't just understanding the relationship I have with Christ, but also understanding the rest of the Bible and, the truth of this story. You know, there's a lot of things to research and a lot of things to understand. And, you know, the more you dive in and the more you get to know it, the more strong your faith becomes, at least from my experience. And so, yeah, thank you. All right, does anybody have any other ending thoughts? Oh.
I think this is also supposed to be an encouragement to the Israelites because they can see we've gotten this far and here we are, and so we can get to the end because we've gotten this far.
Yeah, definitely true. You know, they've gone through a lot at this point, and I think they're ready to move forward. So very good point, Alex. All right. Okay, and...
Yeah, and on that note, yeah, I mean, I think it's also just important to, you know, meditate on where God has, you know, taken us, you know, where God has taken us from, and just to give us hope that, you know, and just to see how God is working in our lives, and, you know, to give us the encouragement to, you know, let the Lord finish that good work that he had planned for us from the beginning.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Very inspirational. All right. Well, that's all I have for today. We're going to take a 10-minute break and then go into songs, followed by the Lord's Supper, I believe.